Hi, Al Weinrub. Welcome again to KBOO.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Al Weinrub is one of the leaders of the community energy movement in California. That movement's goal is no less than demonstrating to the world how to stop global warming by reconstructing the energy system. These public energy programs operate democratically. They're confederated together for emergency help and for emergency storage. They also can work in reconstruction, not just transforming energy production and use, but also in transport, housing, agriculture, other systems, working to transform the way we produce, consume, and live in their localities. Al has tirelessly worked for the last 12 years in that energy democracy movement. He's now the coordinator of the Local Clean Energy Alliance. He also coordinates the statewide California Alliance for Community Energy. He's an activist. He works with others. He builds movements. He also writes and agitates. He co-edited the recent book Energy Democracy and also wrote Community Power, a short book, Decentralized Renewable Energy in California, which is available at the website of the Local Clean Energy Alliance. Bill McKibben wrote this about Al's book. One of the great side effects of moving to renewable power is that we will replace vulnerable, brittle, centralized systems that are too big to fail with spread out democratic energy sources small enough to be resilient. So, Al Weinrub, last week we discussed the rise of community energy in California and the attack on community energy by California's invest-your-own utilities, who were at first complacent, believing these upstarts who thought that local sun and wind power could never replace their big plants burning coal around the clock. But the investor-owned utilities, they soon realized they were losing customers all over the state, and they have gone on the attack. They were going to go into more detail on this epic struggle in California. So, Al, you give talks and presentations around the state. How do you familiarize the audience, neighborhood people, small contractors and unions, local officials and state legislature? How do you talk about community energy and its great virtues, especially as compared to having a few monopoly investor-owned utilities?
Thanks, Bill. I do talk about this a good bit and write about it. Usually how I talk about it and what I say depends a lot on exactly who I'm talking to, but in general, you know, everybody understands how crucial energy is to life and human activity and everything we do, and now, in recent years, to the life of the planet as well that we all need. The question of how we get our energy, where it comes from, who owns it and controls it, these are all extremely important questions. And historically, at least over the last number of years, last 100 years or whatnot, the notion has been a centralized kind of energy model where, based on fossil fuels, you develop energy in one place and you use it someplace else. And with the advent of renewable energy technologies, that picture has changed completely to where it's no longer necessary to have remote energy sources, but they can be very close to home, what are called distributed energy sources, meaning that they exist everywhere if they can be harnessed. So obviously that has to do with solar energy and wind energy, but it also has to do with resources like energy efficiency and what we call demand reduction, meaning a way of harnessing energy in a way that doesn't waste it in the way that traditionally, you know, we do. So the notion of distributed energy has come onto the scene as sort of a technological change that's possible with a switch over from fossil fuels. And so people tend to think about it largely in technology terms and the notion of an efficient energy system, a brittle energy system, or a resilient energy system have a lot to do with the technology of things. But actually, when we're talking about energy, it's a resource so basic to life that it's really not just about the technology. It's really about, you know, what we're trying to achieve as a society or as communities. And that has a lot more to do with the decision-making about energy and who decides what kinds and forms of energy to develop. And that's where the notion of community energy comes in. It's not really a technology thing. It's really about ownership and control of energy resources. And the notion of community energy is that instead of the decisions being in the hands of monopolies in Wall Street, that it can be in the hands of our community. So it's very much about democratizing energy. I mean, that's a term that we've been using for the last half dozen years or so to try to capture the notion that we're not talking about just about technology. We're talking about political and economic structures and who has power and who has power over energy and energy decision making. So that's the basic notion of community energy. Now, what you do with that decision making power is, you know, then an open question. So the benefits of community energy have a lot to do with what you make of it, assuming you really have some democratic control of energy. So the notion in California of what are called community choice energy programs, which is the main representation of community energy that we have in California, now due to a 2002 law in 2020, roughly 20 years later, we have some 20-plus community choice energy programs where communities have taken over the role of deciding where energy is going to come from for their communities. They've taken that role away from the monopoly utilities. So
those utilities now serve what? Close to between 30 and 35% of the total customers in California?
Yeah, currently in California, it's roughly on a parity with the investor-owned utilities. So these are the monopoly utilities. I mean, across the state, energy providers fall into a number of categories. The investor-owned utilities are one, and they control about 30% of it. But there are municipal utilities, which are public utilities. You know, that's probably another quarter. And then community choice programs, somewhere between 25 and 30%. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but then there are also people who put up solar on their own rooftops and whatnot, businesses. So a certain amount of energy is self-generated as well. So there's a distribution. Currently, the investor-owned utilities only have 30%. And this is largely due to rise of community choice programs, which have cut in.
Right. What happens when people in the audience say, well, what about the cost? Is it going to cost me more to go into community choice? And they'll say, well, what about reliability? You know, the big utilities have been on this campaign for many years, and they're continuing, although it's absurd. But it sounds right. The sun only shines a period of the day and sometimes not at all, and the winds are the same. They're intermittent. And we have these plants that will give you energy all day and night long. You can always depend on us. How do you deal with that, those two arguments about cost and reliability?
Right. Well, these are technical questions, and we could talk about technologies ad nauseum, but there's no question about the fact that the technologies exist and the methods exist for using distributed energy resources to provide resiliency and to provide stability to the energy system. It's just a matter of putting those technologies into play, and then we get right back to the political and economic questions that I was talking about before. So those are technical questions, and those are technically resolvable. They have to do with where you put investment and how you shape your energy system. And both technologies are available and can be used. The question is which one is going to be used is what's on the table. And that's where the community energy question comes from. Even though we have some 20 different community choice energy programs, since they are all locally governed, they make different choices about what they want to do. So the notion of community choice is a vehicle, it's not a destination. And the destination should be decided democratically and publicly. And within that, what you're speaking about is two energy models, you know, the centralized energy model versus a decentralized energy model. And within the decentralized energy model, there are many technological ways of addressing questions of resilience and whatnot. If you want to look at the wrong way to do it, that is a centralized energy model, because we've seen in California in particular what the impact of that model has been. We've had wildfires that have stormed through our communities caused by faulty and defective transmission lines. That's the centralized energy model. We have power being shut off to our communities by the monopoly utilities because it's economically more advantageous to them to shut off power than to have to pay for the damages done by wildfires. That's the centralized energy model. If you look at questions of jobs and economic activity and the things that give communities real resilience, those jobs and that homegrown kind of economic development don't happen with a centralized energy model. So obviously, community energy is all about a decentralized energy model, and the kind of benefits we're talking about is the possibility of real resiliency, the possibility of having really sustainable energy systems where you balance, you know, your use of energy with the capacity of the planet to withstand that assault. You balance energy development to meet the local needs for economic development and stability, and you develop energy in a way that recognizes the historical disparities in which low-income communities and communities of color have basically borne all the negative impacts of energy development and none of the positive impacts, where we can actually increase equity and so on through this model.
Now, right. One of the great virtues of community energy is that whereas the big utilities send little flyers in their bills saying, turn off your lights, asking people to conserve energy and reduce use, and what do the people do with those things? They throw them right away. It seems to me a community energy agency that is having staff there and also be having organizers going out into the community and talking to people and talking to neighborhoods and promoting through the local papers and the local media, not just the advertising of big utilities, but in fact talking about what ordinary people are doing, as well as talk about the lowering of capital costs for building energy. The less energy you use, the less the cost to the community. That would then ultimately be a benefit to all the people in that community. I'm not sure how much staff and money and capacity to do that for many of the agencies, but it seems to me that's so important in stopping climate change, is reducing the use of energy and reducing the capital costs of conversion to clean energy. Is that seen as important by, let's say, the legislatures, maybe the public banks now in California?
Yeah, I would say it's hard to speak for what these major institutions are thinking. I can't address that too much. But from a community perspective, what are important priorities is clearly different from organizations that have basically commodified energy and use it as a form of capital accumulation. So what's important to a community has to do with the use of energy, how much energy, the survivability of the planet, the environment that they live in, the ability to get jobs, and so on. And from that point of view, you have a question of cost-benefit that's very different from the cost-benefit. That's the cost-benefit analysis of large corporate energy monopolies. So I'm glad when you asked the question, you didn't talk just about costs, but you talked about benefits, because what's always argued is that the big centralized energy model of concentrated capital actually produces energy at a lower cost per kilowatt hour. And to a certain extent, I mean, that's a valid argument that when you have rooftop solar, the cost per kilowatt hour are likely to be a little bit higher. But it's only talking about a very isolated set of costs. And from a society, when we talk about cost-benefit, we're not talking about those costs just to producers. We're talking about the overall cost as compared to the benefits. And so the cost-benefit analysis for the community is generally very different than the cost-benefit analysis that you have in the major energy institutions. We've seen the examples of where PG&E, our utility, their cost-benefit analysis is that they're going to take money that's supposed to be meant for the maintenance of transmission lines and keeping them in good shape, and they're going to take those monies and stick them into their pocket because that's the benefit to them, and in the meantime, neglect public safety altogether and burn down and murder communities. That's their cost-benefit analysis. From a cost-benefit analysis in the community, even if the production of energy were to be a little bit higher, The fact that it's local investment, the fact that it's cutting down on the stress to the planet, the fact that it's addressing climate change, all of these things are all benefits that are not realized by the big continual growth, consumptive, centralized energy model. So that's the issue, is the cost-benefit analysis. And it's very different from the different parties. And I think people understand that notion, because nobody buys things just on the basis of cost, but what the benefits are per dollar, but, you know, whether it's shoes or insurance or anything. But the question is, what does it take to really democratize this kind of decision? Because even though you have these public agencies, we know that making an agency public doesn't mean it's really all that responsive to the community and the needs of the community. So whenever we talk about democratizing energy, we're always talking about organizing and organizing in the community. And I just want to make that point, because the different community choice programs in California, they have different orientations. They have different destinations that they're using for this vehicle, and many of them are very close to the centralized energy model. So it takes a lot of agitation, and it takes a lot of public organizing in order to push them in the right direction. They have public boards, but public boards are just public boards. That doesn't mean that they really represent the needs of their constituencies. So I just want to make this point strongly, that what we're talking about is organizing more than anything else. We're talking about organizing the public and our communities around their needs in order to be able to make public institutions act in a way that's responsive to those needs.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. I'm talking to Al Weinrub, the coordinator of the California Alliance of Community Energy. It represents more than 20 community energies that now are serving about a third of California electricity customers, operating institutions. They vary a great deal in many ways. Al is one of those people who's trying to push them through to much more public involvement and participation, which is fundamental, actually, to stopping climate change, building models of conservation and use reduction, as well as supporting mass transit and all the other ways that our communities will have to, across the world, especially in the industrialized world, will have to move if we want to have a survivable planet. Now, the investor-owned utilities at first were complacent. They're big coal plants pumping out energy. They were complacent at the beginning, which was important. It allowed more agencies to sort of get started. They're no longer complacent. In fact, for quite a number of years, they've been on a furious attack. Tell us about that. Give us a sense of that attack.
Yeah, so here's an example of the importance of organizing in our communities. What happened starting about a year ago was that Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, one of the largest monopoly utility in our state and one of the largest in the country, decided out of the goodness of its heart to offer its nuclear energy, because it owns Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, slated to be shut down in about 5 years, and offered its nuclear energy at a bargain price to community choice energy programs in its territory. And that began a battle that's still going on, but it lasted about a year, in which the agencies themselves said, oh, here's some cheap energy. You know, it's sort of more or less carbon-free, depending on what you really mean by carbon-free, but nuclear is considered to be carbon-free. So let's take this energy. It'll cut our energy costs, and won't that be great? And this was a case where the response to the community, of the community, was quite different, where in the East Bay, in Sonoma, in San Francisco, and on the coast, and in other parts of PG&E's territory, people in the community said, oh no, we don't want nuclear energy as part of our mix. This is outrageous. This is the dirtiest, filthiest, unsafest, most dangerous energy source available. It should be shut down. We shouldn't be taking it. And that ensued a battle in which, out of 11 community choice programs in PG&E's territory, 8 decided to reject that offer, but only because the community got riled up and fought against it and made their clear to their board of directors of their respective community choice programs that this wasn't going to fly. So I just want to use that as an example of where the agency under its own guidance can do all the most wrong things, and it's really up to the community to set the terms of what's acceptable and what not.
Al, very good talking to you again. I look forward to talking to you about the struggle now in California and the possibilities of fairly rapid build-out of community energy, perhaps as part of a stimulus bill, perhaps using the public banks, small as they are, in infancy in California. Thanks so much for talking to us, Al.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Bill, and I'm, you know, happy to talk at any time. So thank you much for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks a lot. And do keep winning. It's really important. So long, Al.
Bye-bye.